Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911 on the pivot 400 lower level near carousel 4 black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin in the row.
484 suspect, female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. Blue jeans, no further.
Control, high Frank, 401 is a route.
Good evening and welcome to another live edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network. Glad that you are with us on this Monday, the 18th of June. I'm your host of the show, Rick McCann, founder and CEO of Private Officer International. Sometimes we do have folks who ask why you always say the live edition. Why say live? Everyone assumes that you're broadcasting live. But of course, in this day and age, when everything is recorded so often in advance, in the TV trade and even in the radio industry, many shows get taped in advance. Sometimes they record all of the segments of the season in 1 or 2 days, and then it plays out over the next 3 to 6 months. And even in radio shows, sometimes programs will be pre-taped and played days or weeks later. So I always say, you're listening to a live edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio, and mention the date, and that way you know that we're not a robot. You're not listening to something that was recorded in 2005. No, you're listening to a fresh radio show. One of the first things I do whenever I buy a food product, I always check the expiration date. Even on my Diet Pepsi sodas and my bottled water. I don't know. It's a habit. So I want to make sure that product has not expired, that it's fresh, that it's not something that, you know, is going to taste bad. Same thing when I'm watching TV. I want to know, is this something that's a rerun? You know, is it something I've already seen a couple of times or a dozen times or, you know? So I always say in the radio show, for those of you who are always wondering and who sometimes poke fun at me for saying it, I say this is a live presentation of the POI Radio Network so that you know you're not listening to, you know, some old show or a rehash from 2010. Hey, we're really, really excited about all of the programs that we have recorded. Many of you, we're finding, are going back into the archives and listening to radio programs from back in 2010, 11, and earlier this year, and we're really happy about that. We have recorded some great shows, had some great topics, and some great guests, and one of the benefits that people miss by not listening is that we provide a lot of great free training, and we have a number of training instructors and even facilities who comment on the topics that we bring up here on the POI radio as well as the LP zone. And just recently we had an email from someone in LP management who just couldn't believe some of the topics that we covered. Last week we covered kiting, an old crime that has resurfaced recently, and it's a scheme, you know, how to take a number of bank accounts and float checks back and forth and how it can really drain a bank quickly. You can easily get 50, 100, several hundred thousand dollars, even with the Check 24 law that went into effect a number of years ago. So he was very excited about that topic and a number of other topics that we've shared. Now, in the last 2 weeks, on the Private Officer radio show here on Monday nights, we have discussed a very important topic, and I'm bringing this up now. I will be speaking about it again later on in the training segment, but I'm bringing it up now because I want you to understand the value in listening to the program on a regular basis. We do have thousands of people who listen to the program regularly, and then we have thousands of others who periodically scan through and check to see what they've missed. But last 2 weeks, we did a program on a topic that's called Articulating a Use of Force Incident. If you have not listened to those two programs, I strongly advise you to take the time. They're about 25 minutes each segment, and listen to the complete training on how to vividly, colorfully, you know, eloquently, effectively communicate information in a written format whenever you're involved in a use of force incident. And it doesn't have to be a deadly force incident, not by any imagination. It can be a simple use of force, a restraint. It could be a use of pepper spray or a impact weapon or any contact. It's important to articulate why you use that level of force, what made you go to that level, and articulating it on a piece of paper to save your butt from being arrested, sued, or, you know, both. Tonight in this radio program and over the next 3 weeks, we're going to enhance that topic even more. We will be talking in the next three programs extensively about the use of force. And unfortunately, we have just seen a number of people this week again arrested for attempted murder, aggravated assault, kidnapping, because security officers are using excessive force and doing things way outside of the parameter of their duties. And we'll be discussing later on exactly why we think that is. So, you know, don't go away. Tune in. This is a very important show tonight and for the next 3 weeks. You will not want to miss it. This week, we're going to start by laying a foundation of what's going on. And then in the next 2 weeks, we're going to dissect it with some trainers and some other folks. We do have a phone call, and we're going to take that. You're on the Private Officer Talk Radio. Hello? Hello? And you will not want to miss the training on this segment because, you know, we are seeing more and more confrontations, both armed and unarmed. So we'll be discussing that. I do want to say happy birthday to everyone having a birthday this week. Usually we have a list of folks who are having birthdays, and tonight we don't have it in front of us, unfortunately. So just going to give you a blanket happy birthday, everyone who's had a birthday over the last few days or who is having one this week. Happy birthday to you, 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 and you. I also want to say a belated happy Father's Day to the many men out there who enjoyed, hopefully, the day with their children. One thing that I am finding as I get older, and I am older than dirt almost, is that you just don't realize the time that has slipped away. So be sure to spend as much quality time, quantity is not important, but quality time with your children as possible. We have been talking over the last 2 weeks about all of the media blitz, all of the news contacts. I have done a number of radio interviews, TV interviews. They continue to come in. We've had a couple of requests come in over the last 24 hours. We'll be doing another interview in Virginia this week, and we're going to be doing a lot of press conferences over the next few months as we build up to the 2012 Memorial Ride, and we're very excited about that. I sent one of our members, Ken Kingman, an email today up in Montana. We were talking about the ride, and I said, you know, one of the things that I've heard a few times from reporters and even a few of our supporters is you would probably get a lot more attention and do a lot better in your sponsorship and fundraising if you maybe took a horse, you know, went on your journey on horseback or bicycled across country or walked across country. And I was telling Ken, I said, what they want to do is see me have a heart attack before I even complete the thing, you know. I can't do that. We're going to be going four-wheeling. But we're really excited about this 2012 Memorial Ride. It's something that we have never done, and hopefully it will be a very successful event. It will draw attention, which is our whole purpose and goal, to the increase in security officer assaults and killings, and really let the public know, law enforcement know, and the security industry know that we have taken a stand on what's happening. We want people to understand that the industry has changed significantly over the years, and we're hoping for big things coming out of this event. If you would like to participate, either want to donate or you want to be part of the Memorial Ride, you can go online to privateofficer.com. Right there at the front page, there is a banner that describes the information on the upcoming memorial with a link. It will give you more information, and you can also send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. We are accepting donations and sponsorships from companies, and we will, you know, like I said, if you want to sponsor, you are a company, you will gain benefits from it because you will be part of all of our press conferences and media blasts and so forth, and we'll be happy to discuss that information with you once you contact us. But over the next 4 months, there's going to continue to be a media, you know, campaign, and we're really going to continue putting the information out there and letting people know. Last week, we told you about some new additional extended services. We're calling it the 5-star member services. If you have not checked that out, go to the website after the program, of course, at privateofficer.com. Check out the member-only page. We have extended services not only for individuals but also for our business partners, and we are really happy about some of the things that we are able to provide. We recently told you that we have been able to hook up with a credit union, actually two credit unions, so we'll be making that information public to our members very soon. We'll be offering a credit union, which is very valuable because they have lower rates than any bank because they're membership-based, and also they offer better services. Many of their services are free because it's all about providing a service for a member. They really care and treat the member much differently than if you were just a no-name coming into the bank, even someone with an account. So we're really, really extremely excited about being able to do that. We have also connected with several employment sources, and I don't know if you've been on the forums recently, but we have really been able to post some high-paying, quality jobs there. We posted in the last week several jobs that paid in excess of $40,000 a year. We have a number of other jobs that were posted in the last day or two, several director jobs. These are really upscale, higher-paying jobs, campuses, schools, corporations. So if you have not checked it out, go to our website at the forums. You can get to it from our main page at privateofficer.com and check it out today. While I'm on the air, I always tell folks that you can email us direct at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. If you would like to include any information about something that's coming up, maybe some training events or promotion or whatever might be the case, we'll be happy to share it. You can also send your news items. I really appreciate, recently we got an immediate alert on our Facebook page, actually, about a very tragic situation in Canada. We also got an immediate alert from a member about some security officers who were shot in Chicago today. And, hey, so, you know, if you want to submit news, post it to the Facebook page or send it directly to our office, that would be greatly appreciated. But we're really, really thankful for our members and associates across the country and around the world. Also, right there from our main page, you can also follow us 24/7. You can listen to our radio show, of course, right there from the main page. You can also be part of our Facebook page, link right there from our home page on Private Officer. Follow us on Twitter. Be part of our free forums, which really is growing every day. We have hundreds and hundreds of members there. We have free training information, tons of videos. We've got a number of people who are very impressed about the videos and the exchange of information and training. We also post everything going on in POI, and we use that as really one of our base communication avenues. So anything that's going on, any news, anything at all that we need to communicate to our members, you're going to find it there almost before you find it any place else. You can also, right from our main homepage, link to our news blog, which is updated several days a week. And it's we have a lot going on, and you know that's one of the easiest ways to follow us is just go to our homepage. Everything is linked right there. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but we're going to come right back. I've got something pretty funny I want to share with you. Be right back.
I was just going to the grocery store.
Seatbelt violators, beware.
I forgot to put it on.
If you're pulled over because you've broken the law.
Oh, it's so uncomfortable.
And you're not wearing your seatbelt.
It's broken, but I was going to have it fixed.
No matter what your excuse is, you will get a ticket in addition to the ticket for your original violation.
Click it or ticket? That's pretty easy to remember.
There was the explosion, and I remember just opening my eyes, and it got both of my legs. I had surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
All right, we are back with you live on the Private Officer Talk Radio Network. You know, we've got a lot of serious, serious business to discuss tonight and the next three radio programs. But before I go any further, this is something I found today in my library of different sound bites and soundtracks that I use, and this is one of my favorites. I don't think I've shared this recently, if at all, but this is pretty comical. Some of you may have heard this before, but this will lighten up the moment, and then we'll get serious again. But here's something for you to chuckle about.
This is the city. Los Angeles, California. Some people rob for pleasure. Some rob because it's there. You never know. My name's Friday. I'm a cop. I was working the day watch out of robbery when I got a call from the Acme School Bell Company. There'd been a robbery.
There's been a robbery.
Yes, sir. What was it?
My clappers.
Your clappers.
Yeah, you know those things inside a bell that makes them clang?
The clangers.
That's right, we call them clappers in the business.
A clapper caper.
What's that?
Nothing, sir. Now, can I have the facts? What kind of clappers were stolen on this caper?
They were copper clappers.
And where were they kept?
In the closet.
Uh-huh. You have any ideas who might have taken the copper clappers from the closet?
Well, just one. I fired a man. He swore he'd get even.
What was his name?
Claude Cooper.
You think
that,
he...
That's right. I think Claude Cooper copped my copper clappers. Kept in the closet.
You know where this Claude Cooper is from?
Yeah. Cleveland.
That figures. That figures.
What makes it worse, they were clean.
Clean copper clappers.
That's right.
Why do you think Cleveland's Claude Cooper would cop your clean copper clappers kept in your closet?
Only one reason.
What's that?
He's a kleptomaniac.
Who first discovered the copper clappers were copped?
My cleaning woman. Clara Clifford.
That figures. Now let me see if I got the facts straight here. Cleaning woman Clara Clifford discovered your clean copper clappers kept in a closet were copped by Claude Cooper, the kleptomaniac from Cleveland. Now is that about it?
One other thing.
What's that?
If I ever catch kleptomaniac Claude Cooper from Cleveland who copped my clean copper clappers from kept in the closet...
Yes?
I'll clobber him.
That's a really funny clip. Johnny Carson and Jack Webb did it live on the Johnny Carson Show many years ago. Jack Webb, of course, longtime detective on the Dragnet Show and... You know, a fantastic police actor, someone who is well recognized. That's really a funny piece. I thought you all would enjoy it before we got down to business. But, you know, you gotta laugh every now and then, and hopefully that brought a smile to your face. I want to mention also, I forgot to mention this earlier on, but we're also looking for host, guests to be on the show. If you would like to be part of the radio program, maybe you have a topic of interest that you would like to share with our listeners, feel free to send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. We are also looking for folks to host their own radio show once a week, once a month. It is something that is a turnkey process. You will have the benefits of having all of our listeners already on the Private Officer Radio Network, and you will have the benefits of having all the technical support through our own technical personnel. And if you'd like more information, send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. Also, I want to mention that we posted a video, a very important video on the forums. It's called Shake and Bake. And this is really an excellent training tool about portable meth labs. Meth labs are very, it's a problem, and it's increasing. At one point, a couple of years ago, it looked like it was starting to slow down a bit, but actually it's picking up. And now druggies have found a way to actually mix their meth in just about anything. One shoplifter was arrested at Walmart last week. In the LP office, while she was waiting for police to arrive, she actually was making meth in her purse. And this training video, I think, is very enlightening. So if you're a member of the forums, go check it out. It's called Shake and Bake, about portable meth labs. It can be any place, in a suitcase, in a purse, in a jacket pocket. They use plastic water bottles, Pepsi bottles, cans, just about anything you can imagine to mix up their drugs. And they're very dangerous because they are highly explosive and highly toxic. So this is a video that you definitely want to check out. It's an excellent training piece. And if you're looking for something, you know, a training article or training video for your class or for your training school or your company, I would highly recommend that. We've talked about virtual chapters. We do have a number of brand new chapters opening. We're very excited. We've had great success in the last month or two opening chapters. We have a number of folks now forming chapters in Dallas, Fort Worth, a new one opening in Tennessee, a new one opening in Baltimore, Maryland, a number of folks with interest in a variety of locations, a brand new one opening in Kansas City. So a lot happening on the chapter front. If you would like to open a chapter in your area, hey, why not? It's pretty easy to do. Just go to our website at www.privateofficer.com/chapter, listen to the audio, and then contact us, and we will help you to get started. It's very beneficial to have a chapter in your neighborhood. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it, free training, an excellent opportunity for you to network, and really, it's beneficial to the community, to your organization, and to the security industry in your area. Very quickly, in the breaking news, as you probably know, if you read our news alerts, three G4S armored car guards were killed a few days ago on the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada. It was the first time since 1994 that an armored car guard was killed in Canada. So very tragic. Unfortunately, as with a case earlier this year in the U.S., it was another security guard who was responsible for the murders. Travis Baumgartner was arrested at the U.S. border crossing over with $300,000 in his pocket. Now, we had put out an alert to be on the lookout for him because we got a notification from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and we sent that information out, and, you know, fortunately, law enforcement was really on top of this, and they caught him very, very quickly. This weekend, two security officers were shot. One is in serious and critical condition in Chicago. The other one, also in Chicago, was shot in the leg, and he will recover just fine. We have a lot of security officers being shot and stabbed and run over, and thankfully, you know, they recover. You know, there's a lot of confrontations, and people ask, the media ask me all the time, why is this? And that's basically because, you know, the simple answer is the model of observe and report has really changed to challenge, investigate, and detain. And, you know, with more public contact, you're going to have more incidents of confrontations, use of force, and, you know, security officers being assaulted and killed in the line of duty. And unfortunately, that is the way it goes. I do want to mention, before we get into our training segment tonight, some folks we're very proud to have as members will be receiving some awards, or they have received awards over the last week or so. Brian Holstegg in Cincinnati, Ohio. Brian is a longtime, lifetime member, was responsible for the arrest of a DUI driver, a very dangerous driver on the streets of Cincinnati, Hamilton County there in Ohio. Evidently, he and his fiance was en route to someplace, and they spotted this person, was able to follow him and get law enforcement on the scene and apprehend them before he could injure himself or kill somebody else. Dale Martin, another longtime, lifetime member in New York. Dale was directly responsible for the capture of a wanted robbery suspect, and he was able to take the suspect into custody at gunpoint, and before police could even get there, the suspect was handcuffed, or as we say, stuffed and cuffed, and congratulations to Dale. Bruce Muller, he's down in Louisiana, also captured a robbery suspect. Suspect robbed a McDonald's, and Bruce happened to be off duty, but in the area, spotted the suspect fleeing. He was able to take him into custody as police arrived. Ken Kingman and his partner in the security industry up in Montana was on patrol over the weekend and was directly responsible for taking a sex offender off the road. So congratulations to those members of the association. Great work, and we need people. We really do. We need people to be alert, be out there willing to get involved. That doesn't mean necessarily that you have to go fist and cuffs with everybody. You know, I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, maybe if we got a little bit more involved in our community, maybe if we got a little bit more involved in our own neighbors and you know, just knew who was supposed to be there and who wasn't, you know, call the police when you spot something suspicious or someone suspicious. You know, right now, Homeland Security and the federal government has a big campaign. If you see it, report it. Yeah, that's kind of what you should do. Be a responsible neighbor. I have one more funny thing to have you listen to right after this break, and then we're going to get into something a little bit more serious. Well, actually, we'll play this soundbite real quick, my sound man, sound producer, show producer says, and we're going to give you this soundbite. Some of you probably have heard this. This is a ridiculous use of 911.
Sandwiches are pretty simple, right? Not that controversial. Cheese, meat, bread. Well, one man got so fired up about his sandwich not being to his specifications that he called 911 on the deli here that made it.
14 sandwiches, but he said to put a little bit less meat, but extra cheese. What I did, and then he didn't want to pay for it.
East Hartford Grateful Deli owner Tila Azenhara told customer Rother McLennan that she couldn't take back the sandwiches because he special ordered them. And that didn't sit well in Rother's stomach. So he asked Tila for her phone and called 911.
I specifically asked for little turkey and little ham and a lot of cheese and a lot of mayonnaise. And they gave me a hard time with them, and she stopped by.
The East Hartford dispatcher, used to getting calls about fires and fallen trees, now getting a call about too much meat. Not enough cheese.
You're calling 911 because you don't like the way that they're making your sandwich?
Exactly.
Tylon Culver is Rother's neighbor. He says this isn't the first time Rother has called the cops to report something not to his liking.
He called the police on me, too. He said I tried to, our building is brick. He said I tried to burn the building down, you know, with a grill.
Turns out our complaining cheese connoisseur has a soft, doughy side.
I think the customer realized how wrong he was, so this morning he called in to apologize, and he said he's going to come back, but not anytime soon, but he will be back.
But tough Tila has a warning for future problematic patrons.
If you call Grateful Deli, put a order in, you better come and pick it up and pay for it.
And not call 911.
Right, and not call 911.
Obviously, this story elicits a chuckle or two, but seriously, cops remind everyone not to use 911 unless it is a true emergency.
He didn't like the way his sandwich was made, so he called 911. I don't know. East Hartford, Connecticut, you know, I grew up in Connecticut. I know how those folks are up there. They get a little cranky if their sandwich is not right, you know, if the grinder's not made right. But that was kind of ridiculous. We'll be right back.
For some children, America isn't the land of promise. It's a place where every day is a struggle. Because today in America, 1 in 6 children lives below the poverty line. For these children, living in poverty means going without medicine, going without food, going without a warm home, or even a roof over your head. And that's life for nearly 13 million children of all races, all across America. Where will you draw the line and get involved? You can help these children and their families find a way out of poverty for good. And you can make a difference in more ways than you think. Will you help? Go to povertyusa.org today. Because 1 in 6 children in poverty is one too many. A message from the Catholic Campaign for Human Development.
HirePatriots.com is a free website where you can help our active, reserve, veteran military and their families by letting them help you. Do you have a chore that needs doing around your home or yard? Is your company looking for a new hire? Then post your jobs for free at HirePatriots.com. Visit HirePatriots.com and post your jobs today. HirePatriots.com.
All right, we're back live with the Private Officer Talk Radio, and tonight we are talking about the use of force, something that is really on the increase. I want to tell you right away before we begin this segment that we are in no way, shape, or form against private security personnel using force. There are situations when you have no choice, absolutely none. We know firsthand what it's like to be involved in situations where you have to protect yourself and others. That's part of the job. We understand that. We train security and law enforcement every day to recognize when and how to use force and how much. There are standards in the use of force. There are a lot of different training, lots of concepts about when to use force, how much, what's reasonable, what's excessive. And unfortunately, in the private security industry, we don't get it because we don't provide enough training to the security staff. Even the states that have requirements of training, I was looking at a number of them in preparing this show. Use of force, you know, a lot of those trainings, it doesn't even mention the use of force. And in the cases where it did, it said 1 hour or 2 hour block. Well, I hate to tell you, but when you've got security people, especially armed officers in the field, who are confronting, investigating, detaining, you know, chasing, involved in all sorts of environments, everything from retail to low income to bars and nightclubs, you're going to see a lot of situations that may require some use of force. And 1 hour or 2 hour blocks of training, it's not going to cut it, folks. It's not going to get it. So for the next 3 weeks, starting with tonight, we're going to be talking each week about the use of force. In the first week, this week, we're going to establish the use of force based on facts, not feelings. Not you think he was going to shoot you. Not you think he was going to run you down. Hunters shoot when? When? If you're a hunter and you go out in the woods, when do you fire that weapon? If you've ever been in the military, when did your instructor, when did your range officer tell you to fire? Not any old time, not when you think, you know, you should, not when you feel like it. No, when you confirm the target. You have to know reasonably the level of force that you should apply. And tonight we're going to be talking about that. Next week in part two, we're going to review a number of recent incidents involving deadly force used by private security. Over the last month or 6 weeks, about 10 to 12 security officers have been arrested for aggravated assault, attempted murder, manslaughter, and murder. Just this week, again, 2 security officers arrested for murder. Why is that? Well, next week in part two, we're going to dissect those recent incidents. We're going to talk to a number of trainers who are experts in the use of force, and we're going to analyze the reasons and establish some corrections. And in part three, we're going to give you solid training on fight or flight, because sometimes it's okay to flee. There's no law that says you have to stay. If you can flee, sometimes that's the best option. We're going to talk in part three about the use and levels of force for different incidents, prevention and de-escalation of force. Sometimes we just, you know, in the heat of the moment, we escalate the situation. We make mistakes because of a lack of experience, a lack of training. Tonight, in part one, we're going to establish some ground rules for the use of force. Now, in training, there's something called the force continuum. And depending on who you talk to and where you go, it's taught differently. But I want you to listen to this training by the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Georgia. This is the method that they train. And this is going to answer some questions also about the use of force.
Hi, I'm Jenna Solari. With me today is John Bostain. John and I are instructors in the Enforcement Operations Division of the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Brunswick, Georgia, otherwise known as the FLETC. John, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Before I came to FLETC, I spent almost 8 years as a police officer in Hampton, Virginia. I served as uniformed patrol officer, police academy instructor, detective, and SWAT team member. Since joining the FLETC staff 5.5 years ago, I've been an instructor in both the Physical Techniques Division and Enforcement Operations Division. I'm currently the senior instructor for use of force for FLETC basic programs.
Well, could you tell us a little bit about the FLETC?
The Federal Law Enforcement Training Center trains federal law enforcement officers and agents from more than 80 different agencies. Part of the training includes use of force. We teach students when a police officer can use force and how much force is authorized.
Well, I understand you're here today to specifically address use of force continuums as a training tool. What is a use of force continuum?
The term use of force continuum is one name for a visual model that depicts progressive escalation and de-escalation of force based on a subject's actions. They've been a mainstay in law enforcement for many years. They are also known as use of force models, use of force ladders, and subject to control matrices.
John, is there one visual model or continuum that's used by every law enforcement agency?
No, not here in the United States. Canada uses a circular model called the National Use of Force Framework in all of their agencies. But here in the United States, it's much different. Continuums vary from state to state and agency to agency. They come in a number of different forms. Some look like timelines, some look like pyramids, some even look like donuts.
Are use of force models an effective tool for training officers?
You know, I think we might be getting a little ahead of ourselves here. Before we can start a discussion about use of force models and continuums, let's first address the legal standard for use of force by law enforcement officers in the United States.
Okay, great. Who sets that legal standard?
It's set by the United States Supreme Court and its interpretation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, then, has the Supreme Court said when law enforcement officers are allowed to use force?
Yes, they have. The Supreme Court has expressly stated the right to make an arrest or an investigatory stop necessarily carries with it the right to use some level of physical coercion or threat thereof to effect it. In other words, if the officer has the authority to conduct a seizure, he has the authority to use force or the threat of force to accomplish that mission.
So then we know when an officer can use force. Has the Supreme Court told us how much force a police officer can use to control a suspect?
That's an excellent question, Jenna. According to the court, in a 1989 case named Graham versus Connor, police officers may use the amount of force that is objectively reasonable to control subjects during a lawful seizure. Objective reasonableness is based upon the totality of circumstances known to the officer at the moment force was used.
What does that mean exactly?
The court will consider any objective fact the officer was aware of at the time he applied force. It's up to the officer, of course, to articulate those facts to the court. If another reasonable officer could have taken the same action based on those facts, then the use of force is lawful. Objective facts are those that can be observed or measured by others, like the time of day, environmental surroundings, number of officers versus the number of suspects, things like that. Objective facts don't include things that are solely in the officer's mind, such as a dislike of the suspect or fear or nervousness felt by the officer. Those are subjective facts, and they don't carry any legal weight when it comes to use of force.
All right, so let's say an officer has an arrest warrant for Fred Ferkel for domestic assault and battery. What's the right way, according to the Fourth Amendment, for that officer to approach Fred Ferkel and execute the warrant?
Well, Jenna, there's no single quote-unquote right way to handle it. Here's what I mean. Let's say Fred Ferkel has a known history of resisting arrest and assaults on a police officer. Let's also say that our friend Fred is about, 6'2", and weighs about 225 pounds. Let's also say the officer is making the arrest by himself at approximately 10 o'clock at night. When he approaches Fred's house, he sees Fred out in his front yard. The officer identifies himself as a police officer, and he says, "Fred, you're under arrest." Fred responds by turning towards the officer, pointing his finger at him, and saying, "Screw you. I'm not going to jail tonight." Now, one officer, maybe one that's highly experienced with martial arts, may decide to control Fred using an empty hand control technique. Another officer, based on the exact same information as the first, may decide to spray Fred with OC. Yet another officer, maybe one much smaller in stature than Fred, may decide to use an electronic control device such as a taser. And yet another officer may handle this exact situation by using an extendable baton. That means there may be a whole range of reasonable force options available to the officer in a use of force situation. There's not a single correct answer that can be relied upon each time.
But does the example we just discussed, all those options that you laid out for us, do those all conform to the Supreme Court case law?
Absolutely. The court has acknowledged that the use of force decisions are made under circumstances that are tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving. The court doesn't expect the officer to be perfect. All the officer has to do is be reasonable. There's no preset solutions to use of force situations. Every incident presents a unique set of facts. There's just no way to anticipate them all.
Well, then, the use of force continuums must say the same thing, right?
Actually, no. Use of force continuums try to anticipate the subject's actions and equate them with a predetermined officer response.
Why? Is that required by the Fourth Amendment?
No, quite the opposite. In Graham, the Supreme Court specifically stated that the test of reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment is not capable of precise definition or mechanical application.
So let me make sure I understand this. Use of force continuums try to do what the Supreme Court said is impossible.
Exactly. Again, most continuums are structured in a way that a specific subject action equates to a specific officer response, regardless of the totality of circumstances known to the officer. So in the arrest warrant example we discussed earlier, a model might say the officer is justified in using hands-on control technique or OC spray, but not a baton or taser. That's just not legally accurate. Even though the law says that all four of those responses could be reasonable, every model I've ever seen contradicts that. That's because it's impossible for a model to account for things like known violent history of the suspect, duration of the action, size, age, condition of the officer and suspect, and other facts that may make up the totality of circumstances.
Other than the apparent conflict with the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Fourth Amendment, are there any other concerns about use of force continuums?
Yeah. Each continuum has its own general categories of subject actions. They include phrases such as passive resistance, verbal noncompliance, active resistance, assaulted from grievous bodily harm. You get the point. The problem is that there's no universal agreement on how to define each of these terms. Active resistance to one officer may appear passive to another, and it may even appear assaultive to another. These types of inconsistencies may cause an officer to unnecessarily hesitate as he tries to pigeonhole a subject's actions into a specific definition on a use of force continuum. Use of force continuums are a cognitive tool, and they're not very useful in the rapidly evolving dynamics of a critical incident.
Well, has anybody done any studies to determine how clearly an officer can think during a critical incident? I mean, is it difficult to use a cognitive tool while trying to control a suspect?
That's a good question. There's been a great deal of research into what is called the biomechanics of lethal force. Much of this research has been conducted by the Force Science Research Center located at Minnesota State University in Mankato, Minnesota. According to the most current research conducted by Force Science, things happen so quickly in a use of force incident, the subject can take actions against an officer much quicker than the officer can react. Utilizing use of force continuum as a cognitive tool takes additional time. Time an officer just doesn't have in a use of force incident, which compounds the problem.
Well, that's interesting. What other issues have come up regarding use of force models?
Well, there's a number of other concerns. Most models hold to the principle of using the minimal amount of force necessary to affect the law enforcement objective.
Well, minimal force, that doesn't sound so bad.
The problem with adhering to that theory is that it encourages the officer to go through a trial and error process, deciding what force response option is minimum, but is still going to be effective. Officers may try a minimal response, hoping it's going to work. When that fails, they try the next minimal response and hope it works. When that one fails too, the situation has deteriorated to the point where now it takes a great amount of force to control the subject. If the officer was just allowed to go and follow the guidance of the Supreme Court and Graham, they could go directly to the force response option they believe is reasonable based on the totality of circumstances.
Was there a benefit to going straight to the most effective reasonable response rather than just trying to use minimal force?
Definitely. The officer will control the situation sooner, which leads to fewer injuries to the suspect, fewer injuries to the officer, and generally less overall force used.
Well, John, the way you've described it, the Fourth Amendment gives officers a pretty wide lane of travel when it comes to use of force. Seems like as long as the officer can articulate objective facts that make his use of force reasonable, then he's satisfied the Fourth Amendment. That's all the courts require, right?
That's right. It's a very easy standard to understand and apply.
So has there been any attempt to make use of force models as easy to apply as the Fourth Amendment standard?
Sort of, but it hasn't been effective. Most models in use around the country utilize something called the 1-plus rule. It's been said in use of force training for years that the officer should be one level higher than the suspect on the use of force continuum in order to control the suspect. The confusing part about that is that the officer first has to decide what level the suspect is at and then try to figure out one level above that is. That might work well in a classroom environment, but in the tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving circumstances of a use of force incident, it's just not practical.
But shouldn't the model already say what the right response is? Isn't that the whole point?
Yes, and that's how we know models don't work. When you have to create an extra rule just to make the model make sense, something's wrong.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. First, use of force models actually conflict with Supreme Court case law?
Yeah, they impose more restrictions on officers than the Fourth Amendment requires.
Well, okay. And second, as you explained it, the terms used in use of force models are usually pretty ambiguous.
Right. What one officer considers to be active resistance might be interpreted as assaultive by another reasonable officer. That puts the two officers in different places on the model, even though they're facing the exact same situation.
Well, I can imagine the effect of that confusion is to cause both officers to hesitate.
That's right. Officers who should be taking control of the suspect before the situation escalates are too busy trying to figure out where they fall on a use of force model and what the minimal of force is under those circumstances.
So, John, as a former officer and a current law enforcement trainer, what do you recommend we do with all the use of force models and continuums that are out there?
Jenna, I get asked that question all the time. In short, I think we should do away with them. That's what we've done here at FLETC. We have replaced the model with more legal training, which focuses on the constitutional standard set forth by the United States Supreme Court. From the first week of training, FLETC students are exposed to Graham v. Connor and its requirements. After their initial legal training, the constitutional standard is reinforced almost daily by our Firearms Division and Physical Techniques Division. The legal concepts are further reinforced through reality-based training programs, which include a use of force lab that focuses exclusively on use of force decision-making skills. But in my opinion, the most important thing we can do is focus on teaching students to articulate themselves in written reports that conform to the constitutional standard. We've been conducting training like this for the past 2 years, and all of it has been without the use of a continuum.
Well, now, I want to ask you a question that I imagine a lot of officers and agents out there have in mind as they listen to you describe doing away with these models and continuums. Thinking about things like administrative consequences and litigation that might result after a use of force incident, how would officers justify a use of force if they can't point to a model?
Exactly the way the Supreme Court told them to in Graham. All they have to do is articulate the objective facts that made their application of force reasonable under the totality of circumstances. If the officer's actions were a proportional response to the threat posed by the suspect, it's reasonable. It's really that simple.
Well, boil it down for us. What would be the benefits of throwing out all the models and going strictly with the constitutional standard?
Well, Jenna, for starters, one word, consistency. We have one legal standard for use of force in this country, and that is objective reasonableness. By eliminating the dozens of different models and continuums, we can get the entire country on one sheet of music. That sheet of music is the one set forth by the United States Supreme Court. Secondly, officers can gain confidence in their ability to make use of force decisions because they are armed with the knowledge to make force decisions based on objective facts rather than a subjective model. There will be less unnecessary hesitation by officers in the field which should lead to the ability to control subjects sooner and with less force. As I said earlier, this also reduces the chances of the officer getting injured, as well as reducing the chances of injury to the suspect. Lastly, it puts the officer and the agency in a better position to defend themselves from potential liability, because the officers will be acting in accordance with a constitutional law, which will be the legal standard used in any future litigation.
Well, John, I hope this information gets some agencies thinking about their use of force training. The way you've described it, phasing out models would result in nothing but positive change for law enforcement. Thanks a lot for that information.
My pleasure, John.
This training is extremely important as a foundation. Although it was law enforcement trainers from the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Brunswick, Georgia, when you're dealing with private security, court systems, law enforcement, they parallel private security with the standards required of law enforcement. When law enforcement and private security are using force, making arrests and apprehensions, our standards have to be as high as law enforcement. I know there's a lot of people out there in the industry who will say, oh no, we're private people, we're private security, we don't have to comply with the law, we're not law enforcement, we don't have to do this, this, and this. That's not so. The Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that private security must abide by the same constitutional laws as law enforcement. Tonight, your homework is to research Graham versus Connor, the basis of the constitutional law. You know, it's something that you really need to know about, and the case law that goes with it. Many private security schools and training academies and even law enforcement are still using the plus one rule, something that I was taught back in the 70s, how to use one level above the level being asserted against you, and that just doesn't fly these days. If we use the Constitution, if we use the law, if we use the Supreme Court ruling, we're going to be a lot more effective than if we try to second guess what level of force we should use while we're being, you know, plummeted by the suspect. I think that it's time for security training institutes to stop dilly-dallying in the classroom and start putting together skill-based training as law enforcement requires. One of the problems that we have right now in security is that we are all about getting those 2 or 3 hours of training out of the way and sending our people out into battle. It doesn't make sense. This week, in part two, we're going to go through piece by piece several of the latest incidents involving deadly force by security personnel and their arrest. We're going to try to analyze what happened and why. And then in part three, we're going to wrap it up and give you some solid solutions to the use of force. Until then, be safe, be blessed, and we'll see you back here Wednesday on the LP Zone.